This podcast is a part of the Neuhoff Media Podcast Network.
Governor Pritzker says Region 5 currently has a test positivity rate of more than 9% and an increase in COVID-19 hospitalizations. New mitigations for Region 5 will begin Thursday and will include no indoor dining or bar service, and gatherings will be limited to 25 people. For these stories, podcasts, and videos, go to nowdecatur.com.
He's not running, but it'll help his old running mate. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News.
I know Joe better than almost anybody. I trust him to be a great president.
And the day after tweeting that video, former President Obama will hold his first in-person campaign event for Joe Biden, rallying Democrats in Philadelphia.
He'll get the job done. And Joe and Kamala will want you to keep pushing them to get the job done.
President Trump also went to Pennsylvania, Erie.
It's a choice between our plan to kill the virus or Biden's plan to kill the American dream, and that's what he'd be doing.
He also called his challenger corrupt.
He let China plunder your jobs while his family raked in millions of dollars from China and foreign nations.
But there's a new report on the president's dealings in China. Fox's Tanya J. Powers has it live.
Dave, President Trump maintains a bank account in China, which doesn't show up on his public financial disclosures because it's held under a corporate name, according to reporting from the New York Times. A Trump Organization lawyer says the account was set up to pay local taxes in China as the company pursued licensing deals there, some of which the Chinese government approved after he was elected. The report comes as the president tried to paint Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee, as soft on China, although the former VP's tax returns show no income from China. Dave.
Tanya, we'll see if China comes up in the next debate. National security is one of the six topics, and you can watch Fox News Democracy 2020 coverage of the final presidential debate tomorrow night on the Fox News channel and listen on the Fox News app. A man in the country illegally is in custody in Houston, Texas, accused of killing a police officer while responding to a domestic disturbance.
We want to celebrate his life of service and commitment and dedication to the city some 41 years.
Mayor Sylvester Turner, another officer, was wounded. A sheriff's deputy was killed in South Carolina after a traffic stop led to a fight and a chase and a crash. America's listening to Fox News.
At Fisher Investments, we do things differently, and other money managers don't understand why.
Because our way works great for us.
But it may not work for your clients. That's why Fisher Investments is a fiduciary, obligated to put clients first. It's the highest standard for a financial advisor.
So, what do you provide? Cookie-cutter portfolios like the rest of us?
No cookie-cutter portfolios here. Fisher Investments tailors portfolios to meet each client's goals and needs.
But you do sell investments that earn you high commissions, right? And make commissions when you make trades for your clients?
No. Fisher Investments doesn't sell any commission investment products, and we never earn commissions on trades.
So what's in it for you?
Fisher Investments fees are structured so we do better when our clients do better. When it comes to helping clients achieve a comfortable retirement, we're clearly different. Visit FisherInvestments.com to find out why investors like you switch to us. Fisher Investments, clearly different money management.
Investments in securities involve the risk of loss.
Early voting has set records in some states, and it starts today in another one, West Virginia. So far, the U.S. Elections Project tracker reports nearly 38 million Americans have already cast ballots. For those who want to wait 13 more days, you could go to the polls in style.
Why not take a limousine to your local polling location to cast your ballot on November 3rd? This option is available to older residents who need a ride to vote, and it comes from an unlikely source. It's actually the National Funeral Directors and Morticians Association, which expects they'll give some 300,000 people free rides on Election Day in places like Baltimore, Miami, Detroit, Los Angeles, and Kansas City. The goal here is to help out voters who are 55 years of age or older, although program organizers say they won't turn down any ride requests. John Saucier, Fox News.
NASA has boldly gone where no man could go, but a probe can, an asteroid far, far away.
Dodging boulders the size of buildings on a galactic road trip, OSIRIS-REx traveled a long way.
Touchdown declared.
For a very brief stay.
Sampling is in progress.
The NASA spacecraft momentarily touching the surface of asteroid Bennu more than 200 million miles away to scoop up cosmic rubble.
Sample collection is complete, and the Beccali burn has executed.
NASA hopes to snag between 2 ounces and 4 pounds of Bennu's carbon-rich material, but it's too soon to declare this grab-and-go mission accomplished. It could take a week for scientists to find out how much, if anything, OSIRIS-REx collected or whether they'll have to try again. If successful, the samples will reach Earth in 2023. Steve Rappaport, Fox News.
On Wall Street, stock futures are down modestly the day after the Dow went up 113 points. In baseball's World Series, Game 1 last night went to the Los Angeles Dodgers, beating the Tampa Bay Rays 8-3. They'll play Game 2 tonight. I'm Dave Anthony, and this is Fox News.
You've heard of United Way, but do you know the impact they have on our community? Find out more about the United Way and why your involvement is so important. Every Thursday at 8:30 a.m. on Byers & Company with the United Way Update. The United Way of Decatur and Mid-Illinois is working for a community in which everyone has the opportunity to be self-sufficient, whether that be ensuring that no family goes hungry, a child succeeds in school, or emergency and crisis assistance is always available. Listen to the United Way Update every Thursday, presented by Tate and Lyle. Improving lives for generations.
Here is Nick Smith with your WSOY three-day forecast.
Today is going to be mostly cloudy with a high near 64, and tonight, slight chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 55. For a Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 82, but wind gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. Friday brings a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 70. The current temperature in downtown Decatur is 48 degrees, and your WSOY time is 7:06.
Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, October 21st edition of Byers & Company. Senator Andy Menar will be with us this hour. Plus, we'll check in with Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports. And Drew Early, CEO of Decatur Memorial Hospital. The company starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. We're back here on a Wednesday, the 21st of October, if you can believe it. We are almost at the end of this month. What, Halloween 10 days from now?
Yeah, we're getting there, aren't we?
Yeah. And we've got a lot to get to with State Senator Andy Menar, so we'll get right to it. First and foremost, my condolences to you. I know the Carlinville mayor passed away, or it was announced yesterday, longtime friend of yours and mentor. Tell us a little bit about Mrs. DeMuzio.
Well, she was a wonderful person, Brian. I appreciate you bringing this up right out of the gate this morning. I met her in 1995 when I got to know her husband, who was Senator Vince DeMuzio, passed away in the early 2000s. She was a family friend. She was a personal friend. She was a wonderful public servant. Here in Macoupin County, her name is literally synonymous with the city of Carlinville. And she served as mayor after she lost her race for the state Senate to Sam McCann. I think that tells you a lot about her. A lot of people would have just said, I lost an election, so I'm going to, just hang it up. But she didn't, because she had something to offer. But I will miss her. She was a wonderful person, and she was a remarkable public servant.
All right. Once again, our condolences. I know it's a tough thing when, you have colleagues and then you have, people that are family, right? And mm-hmm. It always seemed to me like that was more the case with you guys. So very sorry for your loss.
I did have
someone who desperately wanted me to ask you about daylight savings time. I think we're trying to hold on to anything we can, quite frankly, in 2020. Next weekend, or is it this coming weekend where we go to the clocks? And I'm assuming
I believe it's November. Yeah, November 1st.
November 1st. Okay. Where are we on this?
So the Senate passed this bill. Actually, it was a pretty big vote. There were only a couple of members who voted no. It got a lot of support from both sides of the aisle. Actually, after we went through the amendment process, took it through committee, and got it to the Senate floor, it is pending in the House. I was expecting the House to take the bill up in March of last year, actually the week after the state shut down for COVID, which I think was around March 13th or 14th. I believe the bill was ready to be heard in the House committee. But then, of course, everything, you know, everything went in a very different direction with our session. In the May session, we were only taking up bills that dealt with the budget or COVID response. So this didn't fall under that in the House of Representatives. So I'm hopeful that, you know, when we get back to some type of a norm with session, we'll be able to bring up bills like this again. I'll probably reintroduce it in the Senate just to keep it at the forefront. But other states are moving in this direction. I think I might be a little off on this number, but I think, you know, it's upwards of about 26 states have passed similar legislation, which, you know, would set in place state law so that when the Uniform Time Act is changed at the federal level, which is what would be required, right? Congress has to act, but it would set in place our state law to make sure that there's not twice. And this is what this is. Twice a year, the government arbitrarily decides that the time's going to change. You know, the government says, well, on November 1st, it's not going to be 6 a.m. anymore. It's just going to, we're going to say it's 5 a.m. This is something that's happening around the country. And I don't think it's a matter of if. I think it's just a matter of when.
All right. Do you feel like bureaucracy is so slow to make a turn or a pivot when the rest of the world has absolutely had to, yet you guys still can't seem to sort of figure out how to govern or create legislation without all being in the same room?
Oh, Brian, bureaucracy and, I mean, just politicians in general are way behind the voters. I mean that has always been the case. That's always been my assessment. And it just takes, you know, bureaucracy just takes too long, in my opinion. You know, and I'm not saying rush things through without public hearings or public input or, you know, like, for example, the bill, this bill in the Senate, you know, went through a process of, I mean, I had to, you know, I had to do a lot of one-on-one conversations with members and businesses and business organizations, about this. But once, you know, once I was able to explain it, there was broad support for it, but absolutely. I mean, bureaucracy is slow.
Yeah,
it is just slow by nature.
I wonder if it's slow by nature is one thing. Time to rehaul everything is another. I mean, the rest of us to keep our businesses open have to and continue to have to adapt. You guys are taking our money to operate, and there just seems to be a refusal to adapt.
I don't know if it's refusal. Let me take that back. I think in some cases it is refusal. You know, in far too many instances, there's just a natural inclination to defend the status quo. I think it's just a natural position that many people are in on both sides of the aisle when it comes to change. But, you know, I say this all the time. I'm one of 59 members, and I'm 1/59th. Of one half of one third of the government, and that's significant in our system, but it by no means gives one person the ability to make decisions in the legislature. You know, the governor's different, of course, but in the legislative process, it is a, you know, it is by nature a true consensus building process, and that just naturally takes an inordinate amount of time.
It does, but I feel like you and I both know why Donald Trump was elected president in 2016, right? I mean,
people were fed up, and he tapped into that, certainly tapped into that feeling with voters in areas that had seen dramatic economic consequences over the course of decades. Absolutely.
Right. But when you start with the premise that the revenue is going to come to you whether you perform or you don't perform, it already sets you aside from every other way of everyone else doing business. If we don't have listeners, if we don't have ratings, if we don't have digital numbers, we don't sell advertising, I don't have a job. But the tax revenue is going to come in whether you guys get anything passed this year or not. What's the incentive? I mean, other than you're going to tell me you feel called to do this, and I believe that you're doing it for the right reason, but there's no incentive to change because the revenue still comes in.
Well, government is different in that regard than business. I mean, government couldn't operate effectively or at all if there wasn't recurring revenue and those recurring sources didn't come in. I mean, I hear what you're saying about performance. And I mean, that's a valid point, but government has to operate differently from that regard. Otherwise, it would be a complete disaster. I mean, look at the years that we didn't have a budget, and I'm not placing blame on one side or the other for that almost, you know, two fiscal years, but look what happened when that continuity wasn't there. We're still fixing some of the problems that were caused during that stalemate when we didn't have a budget in place. When revenue is a little bit opposite of your example, Brian, but in this case, revenue was coming in, spending wasn't controlled, and it was going out the door. And we have tens of billions of dollars worth of unpaid bills that we're chipping away at today. So, I mean, I hear you, and I hear it all the time from constituents, but it's a different construct than
I'm not,
a business is one person, right, or a board.
Yeah, but I'm not saying
the
government
is.
It doesn't have to run completely like a business. I know it's not an apples for apples question, but my point is there's no actual incentive to be better at your jobs because it's going to come in no matter what. Where everyone else in this world in 2020 has had to completely bend and adapt and pivot, and you use whatever word you want to, except for government.
No, I think we have. And by the way, I do think there's an incentive. This gets into redistricting, though, which I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here with your question. But, I know in my district because we talked about this since I was elected. It could elect anybody, right? It could elect a conservative Republican. It could elect a more liberal Democrat. It could elect a centrist. It's a competitive district. So, if you think about the incentive to being reelected to continue to do work pursuant to the vote of the voters, that's there. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of districts like that anywhere in the country these days. The other incentive, frankly, is when government works and it's disciplined and it does things that make sense, that aren't wild and crazy, that naturally, I believe, fosters an environment for economic growth. That, to me, is it ought to be a major incentive for every elected official.
All right. How much is the anti-Madigan stuff working for the Republicans, if at all, here in the state of Illinois?
So, I didn't honestly, I never have thought that that has been overly effective. I think perhaps on the fair tax argument, it's been more effective than, for example, using Madigan against a specific candidate. I mean, you saw the ads, over the years with myself. I don't think that's a particularly effective political pivot for the Republicans, even though they do it every election cycle and spend tens of millions of dollars on that. But I think with the fair tax, it has been more effective than using the Madigan argument against a specific Democrat running for the legislature.
Well, we see both. I have to listen to all the ads, unfortunately, and get all the direct mail, and that's, I guess, the price of citizenship. But I just wonder, it's hard to argue when a lot of these offices, I think your district is very different than, say, the 96th, the 101st, where those seats are one on the red side, one on the blue side, pretty safe, pretty hard for opposition to gain any ground there. But when they come in and make the argument, look, that someone's campaign is entirely funded by the Madigan machine, what's going to be the impetus for this candidate not to vote for him for speaker? I mean, doesn't that resonate with people?
Well, I think it does, but there's examples where you could make the same argument where the member of the House, doesn't support Madigan. Those examples are there today. Maybe they weren't there years ago, but they're there today. But this is what frustrates me about the Madigan question in that specific regard. That's a problem with campaign finance more than it is one person. That's a problem with our campaign finance system because look at, when Bruce Rauner was governor, he funded 95% of all of the contributions or the money coming into legislative candidates for the Republican Party in the General Assembly. That when the legislature and the governor, there should be a check and balance of power there. So this is a campaign finance question that is one that I think is critical, frankly, to democracy today.
Okay.
Because there's too many people that have too much authority with too much money, and it's on both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, I would argue with you that Madigan has been much more effective than Rauner was in spending this money and getting results. But the question is, though, ethics, campaign finance, this is 2020. When is it going to take us to figure this out? We know what the problem is. Yet there doesn't seem to, at least in my opinion, I don't have faith that Springfield is going to fix itself.
Well, we're going to pass an ethics bill. I'm confident of that. I think it's going to be largely inclusive of the 9 points that I and a group of legislators, my goodness, this was a couple months ago now, I suppose, the days are running together. But if you recall, we put forward 9 proposals that I think would, if they were brought to a vote, would have broad support from both sides of the aisle, the most conservative and the most liberal members of the General Assembly, I think could agree on nearly all, if not all, of those points. I believe we're going to pass an ethics reform bill, and I believe that process is going to be driven by rank and file members of both chambers.
Okay, and so am I cynical, or have I just been paying attention most of my life to think that you guys, not you, but the system, will figure out a way to run around that?
No, you're not. No, I think you have good reason to be cynical. I think you do. I'm frustrated that it has taken. I mean, if you look at that list of 9 things, Brian, I don't know anybody who would have. From a policy perspective, so put the politics aside, argue the merits of the policy of what we proposed. And that's not a do-all, end-all list. There's a lot of good proposals out there, but we focused on things that we thought would have broad support. From a policy perspective, there's no reason why those things can't be the law in the state of Illinois.
No, I get it, but how many campaign finance laws have we passed in this country, and yet the politicians always find a workaround?
Well, there's two sides of that coin. Many of the things that we passed, I say we, I wasn't there, obviously, right after Governor Blagojevich was indicted and charged, impeached, put in jail. Many of those laws are they're in motion today, and they have caught, they have worked in terms of what we're seeing today. I can give examples of laws that were passed post-Blagojevich that are now that are working today, doing what they were intended to do. So, government's never – it's never there, right? We always have to look for ways to be better, certainly on the ethics front. We always have to look for and push ways that we can be more accountable and transparent as a government.
All right. Handicap what's going on with the presidential election for me. Where in the hell is Joe Biden? What is he doing?
Well, I think Joe Biden's more cautious than President Trump. That's pretty clear in terms of his campaign. What I've seen, and I see this because I'm an elected official in Illinois, but there's been any number of touches online. There's any number of meetings, rallies, gatherings, et cetera, where he speaks as a candidate. When he's in public, obviously he does things like car driving. A drive-in rally. Where people sit in their automobiles, cars or trucks. I mean, I've seen that many times. But, he's taking a more cautious approach because of COVID compared to the president, who seems to have thrown caution to the wind and, running a campaign like there's nothing happening in the country, like it's a normal election cycle. It's not. And I think caution is a good thing today.
Yeah, I don't. Caution is one thing, Senator, but he seems to have just disappeared off the radar. And maybe what's happening here in Illinois, or maybe what's happening internally with the Democrats, I still believe there are some people out there that he can win votes from. I don't understand the tactics. I don't understand the other tactics on the other side either. It just seems like there was a lot of momentum and then just a lot of silence.
I'm obviously not privy to the internal discussions of the campaign. I can only, give you what I observe. But I think he's a cautious candidate, and I don't find any fault in that, especially given what's happening in the country, at this moment and what the next several weeks looks like for us with COVID. But I will tell you this. I think Vice President Biden's going to do significantly better in areas as compared to Hillary Clinton in Illinois and elsewhere, especially in the Midwest, because he is appealing to those voters. And he's running a campaign to appeal to those voters, which is different than what Hillary Clinton put forward. I think it's better. And I think he's going to do significantly better with voters in the Midwest. And I think that's going to be a significant difference in this election is compared to the 2016 election.
All right. How important is tomorrow night's debate?
I don't know. I don't know if it's honestly, part of me says, you know, it's not important at all, but you can't say that about presidential debates because they're all very important. I think if the president comes out and does what he does, you know, does what he did with the first debate, I mean, that'll be another disaster for him. And I think Vice President Biden has to show again that he can stand toe to toe with President Trump. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this, we're in uncharted waters here. That's the cliche of the year. But, muting of microphones and how that works, that's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I think it is important. And I think it's going to probably be the tone setter for the final days of this campaign.
All right. To me, it seems like people think that we're coasting to some sort of landslide. I'm not sure that I'm there yet with the math.
I don't think so. I mean, and that's not me being a pessimist. I just don't think that's the political world that we live in today.
I mean, you look at these rallies. You can talk about being cautious or not being cautious. The turnout is undeniable.
You mean the Trump rallies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously the images and the photos coming from the president's rallies show his support in those areas. You know, the question becomes how many people vote? How many people turn that act of showing up to a rally, by the way, in the middle of a pandemic, into the action of voting, I think is an open question. Looking at numbers of turnout in terms of early voting, that's clearly tilted toward the Democrats nationally, even in the reddest of states. Is that going to balance itself out on Election Day? I think that is a major open question for the Republican Party today.
All right. What do we see election night? Do we know who the next president is, or are we waiting days, if not weeks?
You know, I think we'll probably be waiting days, if not weeks, in certain states. For me, the question will be, does that impact the overall tally of the electoral vote count to declare a winner on election night? I don't think we're going to be waiting days, if not weeks, in large numbers of states. But I think there's going to be a couple, probably Florida, for example. That to me would be one where all points show that this is going to take a while, most likely in Florida. And if that's the one that tips the balance, obviously we're going to have a very similar situation that we had with Bush and Gore. Until December, I think, until we had the final outcome.
Yeah, I wonder what today's digital equivalent to a pregnant Chad is.
It's a good question.
Oh, my God. What would you say to people on both sides of the aisle about coming together and being united and tackling this pandemic and getting our economy back on track and trusting the system through those days, if not weeks, of people on social media and quite frankly, governments from other countries trying to sow dissent? What would you say to folks on both sides of the aisle about what we need to do as Americans? No matter who wins.
I'll tell you what I am the most concerned about is the landscape after the election, in terms of the country's view of the legitimacy of the government. And then that itself permeates into so many things, the things you just mentioned, Brian. And it's so important, in my opinion, especially, I mean, we're not in a normal situation here, right? We're in the middle of a pandemic. From all accounts, we're going to go through a major wave of spread and a major wave of losing Americans across the country. But coming together to provide legitimacy for the government to operate so that we can address the economic crisis that we're in, the health crisis that we're in, is very important. And, you know, that's something that both sides of the aisle have to take a step toward working to, regardless of who wins. It's imperative. We have to come together after this election.
Senator, we appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon. Senator Andy Menar, running up against the clock here. Apologize, Nick. We have Mark Tupper coming up after stories and news. You know, this is a 50-50 equation to me, the blame. You can throw a lot of blame at Springfield. You can throw a lot of blame at Washington, D.C. You can throw a lot of blame at the American people. I'm talking about at large, not specific. there's a reason why there's so much cynicism, and there's a lot of cynicism because it's been earned. Right?
Oh, absolutely right. It's all around.
But that doesn't mean everything is crooked or everybody. We've all got to be better. We'll take a break. Back with more right after this.
This is Shiloh with your stories now, brought to you by Shop on Main. Modern looks, old-fashioned pampering. The Illinois Department of Public Health announced 3,714 newly confirmed cases of coronavirus disease in Illinois, including 41 additional confirmed deaths. Officials also reported 74 newly confirmed cases, bringing the total number of cases in Macon County to 2,649. Currently, IDPH is reporting a total of 350,875 cases, including 9,277 deaths in 102 counties in Illinois. The City of Decatur Mayor and City Council have approved a new electric supply agreement with Homefield Energy for all residential and small commercial electric accounts within the City of Decatur. The new agreement represents nearly a 20% savings for residents and small businesses. In the coming weeks, Ameren customers in Decatur will receive a letter from Homefield that indicates the new contract pricing and give customers the option to opt out. Residents can opt out at any time at no cost. For these stories, podcasts, and videos, go to nowdecatur.com.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. President Trump trailing in the polls in Pennsylvania by a bit to Joe Biden, tells supporters at a rally in Erie.
I'm not just running against Biden, Sleepy Joe. I'm running against the corrupt media, the big tech giants, the Washington swamp, and the Democrat Party is a part of all of them.
Former President Barack Obama holds a rally for his old running mate in Philadelphia today and says in a video on social media,
I know Joe better than almost anybody. I trust him to be a great president.
The last presidential debate of the campaigns tomorrow in Nashville. Some voters in Alaska, Arizona, and Florida have reported getting threatening emails personalized to them using voter registration information demanding that they vote for President Trump. They appear to be coming from the Proud Boys right-wing group, but its international chairman says somebody faked the address and it's not them. America's listening to Fox News.
Ensuring peace of mind, expanding business, building strong communities. Realize your financial dreams with Busey Bank. For more than 150 years, Busey's built a foundation of broad financial capabilities, vast knowledge, and close relationships that span generations. You can realize your best future. Busey's right beside you. Member FDIC.
Here is Nick Smith with your WSOY three-day forecast.
Today is going to be mostly cloudy with a high near 64, and tonight slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low around 55. For Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 82 and wind gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. For Friday, we've got a 50-50 shot of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise partly sunny with a high near 70. The current temperature in downtown Decatur is at 46 degrees, and your WSOY time is 7:32.
Tupper on Sports on WSOY 1340 AM and 103.3 FM. Streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Back here on a Wednesday, each and every weekday morning, we check in with Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports. All right, we have game one under our belts. I've already heard on the way in this morning the John Elway Clayton Kershaw example.
Well, we talked about the disparity between the dominance that Clayton Kershaw has shown throughout his career in the regular season versus the issues he's had during his postseason career. And last night in game one of the World Series, he pitched like the Hall of Famer he one day will be. The Dodgers won game one 8-3, and he was fabulous. Six innings, two hits, one walk, eight strikeouts. He retired 17 of the final 18 batters he faced. This was vintage Clayton Kershaw, pounding the lower third of the strike zone with an assortment of fastballs. He was like 91-93, sliders and curveballs. They all looked the same coming out of his hand. Fox did a good job of of illustrating that. And the Dodgers seem to enjoy an actual home crowd edge, even though the World Series is being played in Arlington, Texas. Only 11,388 fans were allowed in the stadium. but about 9,000 of those must have been Dodgers fans, maybe more, and I doubt that will change the rest of the World Series. This was also a game that showcased the considerable talents of the Dodgers right fielder Mookie Betts. I think most baseball people would say the two best players in the game are Mike Trout of the Angels and Mookie Betts. And Mookie has already flashed his defensive skills this postseason. Last night, he helped beat the Rays with his speed and his power. In the fifth inning, he walked, he stole second, he stole third, and he used his speed in a head-first slide to score. He beat the throw home on an infield grounder. Then the next inning, he hit a home run. I mean, he's just quite a weapon at the top of that lineup. So Clayton Kershaw shines in game one. Game two tonight, and the Dodgers will send a rookie, right-hander Tony Gonsolin, against the Rays left-hander Blake Snell. Then both teams will be off on Thursday. And game three, four, and five scheduled for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And really the good thing for the Dodgers is that Clayton Kershaw went six innings only through 78 pitches. So he will be very fresh for game five. That's when he's slated to pitch again. Just a real good start across the board for the Dodgers in game one of the World Series.
All right, on the other side of the break with Mark Tupper, we'll do a little Illini football. This look brought to you by First National Bank, the quality bank, now Indicator.
First National Bank has been in Central Illinois for 90 years, proudly serving the communities of Pena, Assumption, Taylorville, Blue Mound, and now Decatur. FNB is known as the Quality Bank for the way they help all their customers with their personal and commercial banking needs. With FNB, you'll receive competitive rates, state-of-the-art mobile banking, fraud protection, and quality service. Visit FNBPena.com or visit any of their Central Illinois locations. First National Bank, the Quality Bank.
Back here with Mark Tupper and Tupper on Sports. All right, Illini football.
Well, the University of Illinois is closing in on the long-awaited start to their football season. Remember, they were originally supposed to open September the 3rd. Then the decision was made that there was going to be no fall season. And then they huddled back up, got some new medical information, and said, we'll open the weekend of October 23rd and 24th. And they will be following a very detailed plan to do their best to keep this team and this league COVID-free. I don't know if that's possible, but they're going to give it a shot. They play at 7 o'clock Friday night in Madison, Wisconsin. Wisconsin is a very hot state in terms of virus outbreak right now. They will leave tomorrow and spend Thursday night in a hotel. The game is Friday night, and by the time they are done in Madison – and, you know, done with the game, done with their media obligations, done packing up, it will be almost midnight, and they will immediately bus back to Champaign. Instead of four buses that would normally transport their traveling party, they will use seven buses in order to maintain some distancing. Now, remember, the players, the coaches, and the staff are getting daily testing with the University of Illinois saliva test, and they get their results in a matter of a couple hours. Normally at the team hotel, they would gather in a ballroom for a team dinner the night before the game and for a team breakfast the morning of the game. There will be no team meals this season. Notre Dame had an issue, an outbreak that they traced to a team meal where everyone was gathered around and one person got sick. Players will pick up a boxed meal and return to their rooms and eat them there. They will fly to road games at Rutgers and Nebraska, but that's it in terms of flights. How and who covers the game from the media is being monitored and limited as well. 25% press box capacity. The Illini radio crew, who will do the game here on WSOY, will travel to Camp Randall Stadium. They're not going to do the game remotely, as some broadcast crews have in a variety of sports during the pandemic here. Only six other media are going to the game, covering it for Illinois, including Joey Wagner from the Herald Review. He told me he will drive up Friday during the game, cover the game Friday night, jump in his car, and drive all the way back. So that is going to be a long, long day for Joey. No fans in the stands except some family members of players. I believe each team is given 400 tickets for family members who wish to attend, home or road. When Illinois is playing at home, the families of the Illini players will be sitting in the west stands And, you know, hey, it's like everything we've been watching. It's different. It's sometimes weird. And yet it's necessary in order to try to get this done. And what the Big Ten is trying to do, I don't know if it's possible. They're going to try to play 9 games in 9 weeks. And it's just, there's no wiggle room there. There's no room for a postponement or anything. So we will see. And already Purdue's head coach Jeff Brohm has tested positive. He will miss their opening game Saturday against Iowa. So Lovie's good to go. 7 o'clock Friday they get started. You can listen to the game right here.
All right, Mark, have a great day, and we'll check in with you first thing tomorrow. University of Michigan's on lockdown right now. Stay-in-place order for all undergraduate students. But athletics aren't impacted.
That doesn't even make sense. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world, but it doesn't make sense.
You understand why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
That's a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they, I don't have a vested interest in rooting against it. I mean, I hope it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there have been ways of like painting people, like if you're skeptical about the end result of something, that means you're rooting against it. That's not the case at all.
No.
You know, I think you just look at what's happening on these campuses and in these communities. I mean, I don't know how you can have a football team at the University of Michigan when the entire school is on a lockdown, right?
Right. It's not really a lockdown.
Well,
I mean, it's not.
I don't envy the decision makers in having to move forward or not move forward, and I think that. Most important point that Mark made was no wiggle room, right?
Right.
And we've seen professional leagues with a lot more resources and a lot more money that have had to have the wiggle room.
Yeah, I mean, the wiggle room in this scenario, if you're a team like Ohio State or one of these major teams that wants to vie for a national championship or something like that, and you miss a game, those hopes are done. It's over.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, it's not going to be the normal thing, no matter what, even if it runs as smoothly as it can possibly run. And I hope it does. Genuinely do. All right, Drew Early will join us on the other side of the Marquee Coffee Break. Fresh roasting coffee, locally indicated for over 40 years. Marquee Coffee, the official drink of choice for discerning coffee drinkers everywhere. The magic is in their beans.
Financing college can be overwhelming. Millikan University is committed to helping families manage tuition costs, and that's why they award more than $20 million in scholarships every year for academic achievement and unique talent. And all students receive a merit scholarship upon acceptance. That way you can spend less time worrying about what you have to pay back after graduation and more time focusing on professional success. Apply by December 15th to meet scholarship deadlines. Visit millikan.edu/scholarships to learn more.
Farming, it's who you are and what you do. And if there's one thing you've learned season after season, it's that yield goes back to the roots. That's why you only trust SmartStax technology to protect the foundation of your yield from corn rootworm. See how it compares with all your trade options at traits.bayer.com/SmartStax. SmartStax technology. Yield goes back to your roots. Always read and follow IRM, grain marketing, and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Performance may vary.
This is Dwayne Nolan, and I serve 6 terms in the state legislature representing the citizens of Illinois. It's my pleasure to endorse Deb Kraft for County Board District Number 5. Deb is an outstanding leader. She is currently the vice chair of the county board. The government that's the most important is the one closest to the people. That's why it's important to have strong leadership, and Deb Kraft brings that leadership, business skills, common sense, and ethics. That's why I want you to join me in voting for her on November 3rd.
Thanks, Dwayne. I'm Deb Kraft, and I serve as vice chairman of the Macon County Board. County governments have been hit especially hard this year during COVID, but with responsible budgeting and working together, we've been able to put the county in the best position possible. I will continue to work for you to make sure that Macon County continues to be one of the best-run governments in Central Illinois. Together, we can build a strong future. I'm asking you to vote for me, Deb Kraft, for Macon County Board on November 3rd. A vote for me is a vote for you, the people of Macon County.
Paid for by friends of Deborah Kraft.
In the upcoming election, the first question will be if you want to amend the Illinois Constitution to change the state's income tax. Some want us to believe we are voting on just raising taxes on the wealthy, but that's not true. We are voting on whether to end the flat rate and empower politicians to design income tax rates as they see fit. We should all be voting no, because it empowers the politicians in Springfield to set income tax rates the way they want to. to change the rates on whomever and however they see fit. Vote no. Paid for by No Progressive Tax, Illinois Farm Bureau.
You're listening to Byers & Company, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Back here on a Wednesday, good morning and welcome. Drew Early joins us, heading up efforts at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Thank you for your partnership with the Macon County Health Department and Crossing Healthcare and the Illinois Department of Public Health for helping to provide the testing at the Decatur Civic Center. It's been unbelievably busy over the last number of days. As you can just sort of see with your own eyeballs looking out my studio windows, the impact COVID's having on our community right now.
Yeah, I drove by this morning, and cars were lined up already, so that's an important resource for our community. You know, if people suspect they've been exposed or they're having symptoms, you know, testing is really the key to keeping this under control, and we're glad to support this effort.
Well, and it's also, I mean, I realize at some point, you know, different hospital systems and different things are competitive, but you guys have put that aside to work together collaboratively from the beginning, including being part of the crisis communication team. And so we notice that, we appreciate it, and we respect it a great deal.
Well, I tell my team around here that healthcare is the ultimate team sport. You know, we can't do this alone. We rely on partners, both in the community and at state level. And if we really want to improve healthcare and health for our community, it takes all of us.
All right. What are your concerns right now? Not just in the COVID area, but just in general health and as we head back into the fall and into the cold and numbers are jumping, hospitalizations are up. And what are, when you're looking at this as sort of a chessboard, what are you worried about?
Yeah, you know, certainly we're busy right now. Now, one of the concerns that I think all healthcare providers and thinkers are having right now is what does flu season mean as well? So this is something that we have control over. You know, you can go out and get a vaccine. I would encourage your listeners to do it as soon as possible. There's lots of options to get your vaccine. You can go into our Express Care North and get a vaccine. You can call your doctor. Even many pharmacies have flu vaccine available. So really get that flu vaccine, because the last thing we need to be dealing with is a really bad flu season. So that would be the first thing. Get your flu vaccine. Second of all, just all the things we've been talking about. You know, it's going to be more and more challenging to socially distance as the weather gets bad and as we get inside. And really just take a moment and think about what your actions today mean for tomorrow. You know, we're busy at the hospital. We're doing well, but you know, this is something we've just got to watch and monitor very closely, because we want to make sure that we're here and we've got the resources to provide anybody that needs health care in the community.
All right, we have a friend out in Park City, Utah, and their community kind of started with this "Stay Safe to Stay Open" campaign. I mean, this goes across the board. I mean, whether you're talking about retail or restaurants or hospitals or people that need procedures, if we all do this together, we're going to be able to be much stronger as a region and as a county and hopefully keep everyone open.
That's right, and we say it time and time again. Cancer doesn't stop. Heart attacks don't stop. Stroke don't stop. So specific to healthcare, making sure that we've got the resources to do these things. But let's be honest, we're all citizens of this community. We want to be able to have access to shopping or you know, if we want takeout, and those are nice things for us to have. And some measured response and some thoughtfulness on all of our part will ensure that those things continue uninterrupted.
All right. And you know, it's amazing. I've talked to so many doctors and so many surgeons over the last 7 months, you know, who've worn masks their whole life, right? I mean, their careers. And the mask isn't, they don't wear that in the operating room to protect themselves. They wear that in the operating room to protect the patient. Why do you think there's still such a disconnect on how this works?
You know, I scratch my head about that all the time. But the reality is that this is like many public health measures. It's not about me. It's about we. And the more that we can wear masks, we can socially distance, protect everyone else to slow the spread. As you said, we can keep things open and we can keep some semblance of normalcy. This will pass. So in the immediate term, we've just got to, you know, kind of suck it up and realize that these small measures, these small sacrifices really will pay dividends and get us to the back end of this thing in a safer, more effective way.
All right. Best advice if somebody's been putting something off for a while. You know, maybe it's not life-threatening, but it's just, you know, impacting the quality of their life. You know, knee surgery, hip replacement, whatever it might be. Right now, even though cases are up, I know the way you guys are running the hospital, I mean, you're keeping all of that stuff separate. Never been safer to be in a hospital. What's the best course for people to sort of get back on track with it?
Well, I would say don't wait. You know, talk to your doctor. You know, the best relationships between patient and doctor are ones that are open, and there's a lot of communication and a lot of dialogue. So talk with your doctor. If you've got something that you know has been bothering you, that maybe you've talked to your doctor about it, maybe you haven't, start that dialogue, because you can then start to plan how do we get you taken care of. Because the reality is, we need to make sure that we're maintaining our health, because when we're healthier during a pandemic, certainly the outcomes are going to be better, but life needs to go on here. So if you've got that knee problem that's been giving you trouble, talk to your doctor. If you've been putting off, you know, back surgery because you've had pain, it's not worth living through pain. We can safely take care of you. Talk to your doctor, talk to your primary care or your specialist, and let us help you get the help you need.
All right. How are your, you know, I think of everybody at the hospital as a first responder, but those people that are sort of, you know, in the trench warfare, this is 7-8 long months for them. How are the folks holding up?
It is, and they've been holding up incredibly well, and we're actually celebrating this week Nurses Week. You know, this is something we typically do in the spring, and we kind of pushed that back because really didn't know what was going on in the spring. So it's given us an opportunity to recognize what I believe are the true heroes of this, the frontline healthcare workers that are coming to work every day, taking care of patients with COVID, taking care of any other patients in a really just a different environment than they're used to. And people are stepping up, and I couldn't be more proud of the team here, and just a great opportunity this week to celebrate all the nurses and the nursing teams that are out here taking care of patients, because we could not do what we do without those frontline folks.
Absolutely. And we're going to need a lot of those frontline folks in the pipeline, right? I was just talking to Dr. Juanita Morris, you know, who's with the Public Leadership Institute with District 61, which was funded by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation. You know, nurses, you know, a big part of that, those people that are out there on the front lines. I know you guys are also actively looking for people, and there's never been a better time, or I think people have seen this profession as heroic than we're looking at right now in our country.
I think you're absolutely right, and you know, the work that's going on through the Buffett Foundation and the public schools is something we're really excited about, and we can't wait to get involved with. You know, the pipeline of nurses is something that we really need to continue to foster and develop, and we need to grow our own here in this community. And DMH really sees an opportunity to invest in these young people, to get people interested in healthcare careers, help develop this interest and foster the experiences, so that when it comes time for them to make those career decisions, they're choosing to go into healthcare, which we said is truly a heroic endeavor at this point. And we're really excited to get involved in that. And, you know, we're at a point right now, you know, we are absolutely hiring. We're looking for, you know, top quality nurses and RNs and LPNs, as well as patient care techs and phlebotomists. You know, we need people to be part of this team, and really what an opportunity to get involved and to work somewhere that's truly taking care of your own community.
All right, we covered most of the bases, but let's touch base one last time on telehealth visits, because there's a lot of things that people can take care of from home through a laptop and the experts.
Yeah, this is something that certainly is not going away. You know, the pandemic really pushed people into this, and I think once people found out really what telehealth was about and used it, including providers, you know, again, a healthy relationship with your doctor is one that there's a lot of communication, a lot of touch points. This gives you an opportunity to do this, and I just am continue to be amazed by the novel solutions that we're coming up with, these telehealth options to really get patients the care they need and really meet patients where they are. That's what this is all about, so that we can get patients care. They're not putting things off, and we can do so much with telehealth. We can initiate care. We can oftentimes complete care for an episodic issue. It's just a really powerful tool, and I would encourage all your listeners to check it out.
All right. On behalf of everyone, please thank all of your nurses and the folks you're celebrating this week for their incredible work. Drew, we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks. Drew Early, CEO of Decatur Memorial Hospital. You ready to do the weather?
Yeah.
I just keep waiting for some sunshine or something. I don't know. It's dreary looking out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not the best looking, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, wait, we got to turn those clocks back. All right, here's Nick with your three-day forecast.
Today's going to be mostly cloudy with a high of just 64. And tonight we've got a chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low of 55. For Thursday, mostly sunny with a high near 82, but wind gusts as high as 25 miles per hour. And for Friday, we've got a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, otherwise partly sunny with a high near 70. Current temperature in downtown Decatur still at 46 degrees. Your WSOY time is 7:54. And this look at your weather brought to you by Melissa Watson, Wells Fargo Financial Advisor. When life happens.
Life has a way of throwing unexpected events and new opportunities our way. When your life goals change with time or fluctuating market conditions throw your plan off course, Wells Fargo Advisors' investment planning process offers the flexibility to make the adjustments you need to help you live the life you want. When life happens, we can help. For more information, call me, Melissa Watson, Financial Advisor, at 420-4640.
So many businesses have struggled and closed over the last 8 years, but especially this year with the effects of COVID-19. What's Representative Sue Shear's answer? Stay home and pass the unfair tax, which is strongly opposed by small business owners in Illinois. While businesses have struggled to survive in the last 8 months, Sue has not been working in Springfield, content to stay home and draw a paycheck. We need real leadership during these tough times, not a rubber stamp from Mike Madigan. Did you know our state budget is out of balance by over $8 billion this year? The unfair tax would raise an estimated $3 billion in revenue. Folks, we're still $5 billion short, but yet State Representative Shearer thinks this is fiscally responsible. She actually voted for this budget. The math doesn't work. We need a leader, not a Mike Madigan rubber stamp. On November 3rd, vote for me, Charlie McGorry. I'll bring leadership for a change.
Paid for by friends of Charlie McGorry.
The next big thing is here. From the system that brought you Roundup Ready to Extend technology comes a soybean like no other. Introducing Extend Flex Soybeans. Elite genetics, now with the addition of glufosinate tolerance. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. No dicamba may be used in crop with ExtendFlex soybeans unless and until approved, and no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season.
Betsy Londrigan is lying to you.
I have not taken any money from Speaker Madigan.
The truth is, Mike Madigan spent nearly $300,000 to elect Londrigan. Londrigan also takes money from corporate lobbyists, even Big Pharma, breaking her promise not to accept corporate dollars. And those negative ads against Rodney Davis? Paid for by corporate cash. A Madigan machine politician, Betsy Londrigan is lying to get elected. There's a better choice. Our Congressman Rodney Davis is taking on the special interests in Washington to get results for us, holding Big Pharma accountable and lowering prescription drug prices, taking on the big insurance companies and protecting those with pre-existing conditions, defending our rural hospitals and our healthcare jobs. Rodney Davis is fighting to ensure that every Illinois family has quality, affordable health care.
I'm Rodney Davis. I'm running for Congress, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Rodney for Congress.
You're listening to Byers & Company, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
New rules for Twitter until... Sometime after the election, we'll get into that because I'm sure the conspiracy theorists are all over it. Right?
Of course they are.
I read it and I thought, this is much ado about nothing. I mean, as far as what the actual changes are.
Yeah.
And I don't know when promoting responsibility became censorship.
Right.
I think it's our lack of understanding what, like, living in a communist country, like, you know, going to Venezuela or Cuba back in the day or even China. I mean, what that actually looks like. I talked to that in great length with Wayne Kent, you know, who was in his job as missionary or whatever you are, you know, has traveled to some of these parts of the world. And the kids who kind of flirt with the socialism stuff really don't understand what that looks like in operation. We'll be back after the news. Stay tuned.
No matter where you are, we're there. WSOY Decatur, 1340 AM and 103.3 FM. Streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
This is Shiloh with your stories now, brought to you by Shop on Main. Modern looks, old-fashioned pampering. Yesterday, it was announced that the railroad crossing at State Route 36 and 22nd Street will be seeing repairs and upgrades. Macon County Board Member Mercy Rood, with the cooperation of the Decatur and Eastern Illinois Railroad, the Illinois Commerce Commission, and the Illinois Department of Transportation, negotiated the agreement. The state of Illinois is preparing a railway highway crossing program agreement for Federal Highway Administration funding. The result is not only an agreement to fix the surface of the crossing, but also to replace the existing circuitry and signals that will be beneficial to both the railroad and the motorists. The improvements are set for next spring.
You know, I just think it's important that we all take the initiative if we see a problem, and you can make a difference. It may take a while.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.